Good morning. It's 8:18 here on America's favorite radio station. You've got the Musers. Today is June 4th, and 40 years ago tonight was one of the craziest scenes in Major League Baseball history, and it involved the Texas Rangers. It was a road game at Cleveland against the Indians at venerable old Cleveland Stadium. And that night there was a promotion to try to fill the stands. I think that place sat about 80,000, and they usually had about 8,000 for Indians games back then. The Tribe was not very good. And so they came up with 10-cent beer night. And joining us now in studio is the noted sports writer, author of several books, including Seasons in Hell, where he writes about the first few seasons of Rangers baseball, and formerly the Ticket's own, the great Mike Shropshire. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you, fellas?
Good. Right. Good to see you again. And you were there that night, 10-cent beer night. You were at Cleveland Stadium. You witnessed it unfold. I can't imagine what that was like. And to set it up going into that game, there was already some bad blood between the two teams.
That's correct. They the previous week, the Indians had been at the old Arlington Stadium, and there was one of these bench-clearing brawls in which Rangers infielder Lenny Randle, who was going to make fame later on for beating up the manager, Frank Lucchese, but he was sort of a one-man catalyst in that event. And in the fourth inning, he had a particularly hard slide to break up a double play and banged into the Indian shortstop Jack Brohammer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess it was about in the eighth inning, they decided to do a brushback retaliation with Lenny at the plate. Milt Wilcox was the Cleveland pitcher, and he actually threw a pitch behind Lenny's head. And so he got two alternatives if you're the hitter, if you want to retaliate against the retaliation, and that's one, charge the mound, but Robin Ventura can tell you how those things generally turn out.
Right.
And there was a second tactic that batters used to talk about, but this was the only time I ever saw it done. He put a bunt down the first baseline, and when Wilcox, the pitcher, came over to field the ball, Randle went out of the base pass and threw a elbow into the pitcher's jaw and then proceeded down the first baseline and butted the first baseman, John Ellis, right in the cojones. And then, so then both the benches clear and everything kind of went nuts. And the Ranger fans, were, throwing cups of beer onto the Cleveland players. And, actually one of the great sports quotes of the year was a Rangers fan climbed on top of the Indians' dugout, and he was wearing cutoffs and sandals and had long hair and a beard, and challenged Dave Duncan, the Indians' catcher, to a rumble. And Duncan said later, he said, "For a minute there, I thought I was going to have to fight Ben Hur." But so anyway, when the teams retreated the next or go back to Cleveland for a rematch, the 10-cent beer night thing was in place, and there'd been a lot of publicity. A radio personality in Cleveland was urging people to give the Rangers a hard time, but what happened was I actually arrived in Cleveland about an hour and a half before the game. I chose not to go spend an off day in Cleveland. You know, I had the alternative to avoid that. You know, there's nothing really wrong with Cleveland, but it's not exactly where I'd want to have my ashes scattered.
Uh-huh.
So I rode a commuter train from the airport into downtown Cleveland about an hour and a half before the game. And at each stop, people were obviously going to the game. They were wearing their Cleveland batting night helmet and T-shirts and all the giveaway paraphernalia. And they were really cocked and loaded for this event, and passing around quart bottles of Jack Daniels, and they were already plastered.
Wow.
And as it turns out, the beer, the 10-cent beer, was Stroh's, and they had trucks in the parking lot and were serving fans out of the beer trucks, even. And so
yeah, before they went in.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
And so it was a perfect setup for, I guess, civil disobedience, but nobody could really have guessed what was getting ready to come next.
Yeah, so as the game was starting, and I guess early in the game, there was a bottle that flew on the field, and there was some ruckus going on. Even in the first couple of innings, did you get the feeling, okay, this is not going to end well?
No, it was. I didn't know exactly how it was going to end. It was the way it happened was there's actually, I read a Hemingway novel, and there's some dialogue in it where they said, well, Lord Roger, or whatever his name was, how did you manage to lose that incredible fortune of yours? And he said, well, two ways, gradually at first, and then all of a sudden. and that's the way it happened. But actually, the first event happened in the bottom of the first inning. And even though it's 40 years ago, I can remember much of this with crystal clarity. But a full-figured woman ran onto the field near home plate and exposed her ample bosoms, and the ovation was extraordinary. And people were shouting encore, but she was hustled off. And then in the fourth, Tom Greve hit his second homer of the game to give the Rangers a 5-1 lead, and naked fan runs out and slides into second base. And then there were streakers and people charging around throughout the game, and they were pouring onto the field sort of in the right field corner, which was the easiest access to the field. And Jeff Burrows, the right fielder, was sort of the brunt of that. But they were friendly for a good while. They'd run by, and he was shaking hands with these fans on the field. He looked like a politician standing in front of a factory glad-handing workers. it looked like, by the seventh inning, I was kind of wondering, how in the world, if this keeps up, can they finish the game?
Mm-hmm.
And then sure enough, by the bottom of the ninth, it was completely out of control. And I'll say this, at that time in my career, I was, I guess, American sports writing's answer to Jesse Pinkman. And so I was pretty well qualified to observe and diagnose sociopathic behavior, and so the umpire, the crew chief, was Nestor Shylak, who was the most respected umpire in the league, and he finally pulled the plug in the bottom of the ninth after the Indians had come back to tie the game 5-5, and he, after being struck himself by a chair, and finding a hunting knife stuck in the ground, he ran into the dugout and phoned the PA announcer and announced that the game was over and forfeited to the Rangers. Man. And at that point, I had to get down into the clubhouse as best I could, and you had to go through the stands to do that at that old stadium. And my concern was not so much personal safety, but if I get down there, can I get back into the press box, and file the story? But my first stop was the little umpire's dressing room to get some comments from Shylak, who was a no-nonsense kind of guy who was a decorated veteran, had been wounded at the Battle of the Bulge, and everybody, mutual respect. But his comments were of a nature that were, I've never heard so many F-bombs ever in a circumstance. And I was thinking, well, here I am risking my life to get quotes that you couldn't put in Hustler magazine, much less a so-called family newspaper. And then I went into the Rangers clubhouse, and the mood there was kind of subdued, and they were really glad to be in one piece, given what was taking place out there. There were some fist fights going on. The Rangers actually abandoned the dugout and charged onto the field, carried bats to go to Jeff's rescue.
Yeah, didn't Billy Martin tell everybody to grab a bat, or was he handing them out in the dugout?
I don't know exactly who was handing the bats out. The first guy out of the dugout was the bullpen coach, Charlie Silvera. And the umpire had ordered the bullpens abandoned by about the seventh inning, and any relief pitcher would warm up on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
But little old tough Charlie was the first guy out there. And then the big damage was done by Ranger rookie first baseman Mike Hargrove, who had to dodge a an empty wine bottle earlier that that seemed to make him mad. And
well, while he was playing first, or yeah. while he was going to the plate?
No, while he was playing first
wow.
base.
Wow, man.
And there were all kinds of items thrown from the stands, including batteries. I hope they're like flashlight batteries and not automobile batteries, but knowing those people, who knows? But it was something that I obviously won't
forget. Did you fear for your safety when you were walking down there through the stands? Like, man, one of these jokers may take a swing at me, or were they starting to clear the stands at that point?
Well, they were. My main concern was at that point was getting the story done and getting the, you know, sweating the deadline and all that. A reporter from a suburban Cleveland paper, though, went down there and attempted to interview some of the fans, and he got his face punched in good for that effort.
Wow.
And then afterwards, I had to, the Rangers, the team bus left with a four-car police escort, and by then, the police had arrived and sealed the place off, and no cabs could arrive there, and so I had to walk back to the hotel about 4 miles, and there was a park there, and I heard a gunshot, and that's when I kind of, let's just say, elongated my stride and hustled back to the hotel. That's when Jeez. I was kind of sweating myself. But,
this is the great Mike Shropshire with us in studio. We are reliving 10-cent beer night, the game between the Indians and the Rangers 40 years ago tonight, June 4th at Municipal Stadium in Cleveland. So was there a game scheduled the next day? Did they come back to the park and play again, or was that?
No, they came back and played the next day. They the Indians protested the forfeiture, but the American League president Lee MacPhail said no, it stands. And so so the next day it was business as usual. 5,000 fans in that that huge colossal place, and you know that one of the good parts of that job back in those days was going to these old ballparks. It was Fenway and Yankee Stadium and Tiger Stadium and the old Comiskey. And they were saturated with tradition and charm. But that Cleveland place, which was built in the mid-20s, was kind of austere and intimidating in a way. You know, it's not the kind of place that you associated with fun at a baseball game. And then with those small crowds, it was even more bizarre.
So no one would do this today because it's just ridiculous, the liability of 10-cent beer, plus they wouldn't want to lose the concession compared to the $8 beer. But was some of this, do you think, the time? You know, it was the 70s, you know, Vietnam was
There's
was
no
winding
doubt about
down.
That. The public insurrection was at its pinnacle really in the 70s and not the 60s. And then also Richard Nixon was going to resign as president a month after that, and so there was definitely a mood to the country that event kind of exemplified. But beer kind of, I guess, had to take the fall. You know, when I was growing up, beer and baseball were card and pony, and you know, Dizzy Dean doing the CBS Game of the Week sponsored by Falstaff, and he sold an ocean of that stuff. Yeah, and you could tell how many he had had during those telecasts by how early in the game he started singing the Wabash Cannonball. And so beer really kind of took the fall on that, because if beer makes people behave that way, then Fort Worth, Texas would have been burned down every weekend for the last 150 years.
So that night on the field, so you've got drunk fans pouring onto the field and going after professional athletes.
That's right.
Did any of the athletes cold cock a fan or beat the hell out of a fan?
Yes, they did. Hargrove did. Ranger backup catcher Duke Sims was doing a Hulk Hogan on some people. And some of the Cleveland players ran out there to come to the, I guess, rescue of the surrounded Ranger guys, and I remember talking to Billy after the game, and he particularly singled out the previously mentioned Dave Duncan and also Rusty Torres, and he said he was out there trying to reason with the Cleveland fans, but they wouldn't listen, and so Torres and Duncan laid them out, was the way Billy put it. And so, oh yeah, it was there was hand-to-hand combat going on big time. And let me just, if there was a real good chance that had things gone just a little bit more, there might have been a fatality or three. And if that were the case, then we wouldn't be really talking about 10-cent beer night as a sort of a comic event that,
right.
that it was now. That would have changed everything. In fact, I don't think Seasons in Hell, which is a humor-based book, ever would have been written
mm-hmm.
if it were not.
Have you got a knife flying on the field and bottles? And
well, people did have knives, and they were tearing chairs, literally stadium chairs, out and throwing them out of the upper deck and carrying them out onto the field. And in my vantage point, the press box was at the base of the, I guess, what's the first deck, you know, out mm-hmm. there along the first baseline. And it's a great place to watch the ball game, but I really couldn't see with all those people on the field, I really couldn't see the dynamics of the stuff that was described to me later. And when I finally got back, though, to the hotel, several of the players were in the lounge, and they all pulled me aside, and they all had one question. And when a game's forfeited, do the stats count?
Grieve wanted his two home runs to count.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Burris was hoping the other way because I was 0 for 4 against him. Anyway, we can. But, of course, his explanation, well, he said that the marijuana smoke was so thick out there that that he thought he had a pretty good contact high going. Of course, Jeff went on to be the American League MVP that year.
Mm-hmm.
Billy was manager of the year. Hargrove was rookie of the year. And I think that event, if nothing else, sort of galvanized the team that had lost 105 games the previous season. And it sort of, I think, gave them sort of an esprit de corps that lasted throughout that season.
What a fascinating chapter in baseball history and in Rangers history. Mike Shropshire was there that night. Thanks for stopping by the studio and reliving it with us. And always good to see you.
Well, great. And also that book, Seasons in Hell, is now available in ebook form, Diversion Books. And so now you can get me for $5 where it used to cost $25. And so I invite fans to check that thing out.
I've read it and I highly recommend it for any baseball fan, but specifically for Ranger fans. It's chock full of funny stories. It's a great read.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. It's
you bet.
Great.
Thank you, Mike. That's the great Mike Shropshire. 40 years ago tonight, he was at Cleveland Stadium for 10-cent beer night. What a legendary story. It's 8:36 on the ticket. And coming up next, we're going to visit with Chicken Parm Johnson. He was one of the few players that was there at 10-cent beer night that is willing to talk about it, and he'll give us his side next.